The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
Welcome, everybody, to a brand new year, 2025. Happy New Year. Since we visited with you last time, just before the festivities of bringing in a new year, off to kind of a, well, let's just call it a tumultuous and in a lot of cases, tragic start, disappointing start. With the incident that happened at 3:15 in the morning, just 3 hours into the brand new year in 2025, last Wednesday morning, January 1st, 2025. And of course, I'm speaking of the horrific incident that took place in New Orleans on Bourbon Street in the area of Canal Street. And, you know, it was funny. I think I mentioned to you a couple of weeks ago in a in one of our Need to Know broadcasts, and welcome to Need to Know, by the way. I'm Kip Kiefer. I come to you each and every week here on TKR and across the Apple platform of different broadcast services to bring you the show and talk about things that I think are important that you need to know. And we're going to do that today, centering around how we got the New Year's off to such a disastrous and heartbreaking and outrageously abominable start. Because I don't like that now we live in a society where we sugarcoat everything. We have to choose less abrasive words. Words matter. The words you use matter. And that's the central theme of what we're going to talk about today on Need to Know. Because what happened, and I even just did it a minute ago, I called what happened an incident. It's not an incident. It was an abomination. That's the best word. You had someone callously and calculatingly remove people from the face of the earth, take away their lives in the blink of an eye in this indiscriminate fashion of just lashing out your own frustrations, your own limitations, your own vitriol and wrath, and you kill, murder. This was mass murder. This wasn't a tragedy. This wasn't an unfortunate incident. This was mass murder of people this guy didn't know, of people that were just out to celebrate the new year in one of the most iconic spots in the country. Just a couple of weeks ago, I was standing leaning on the signpost of Bourbon and Canal where they intersect. And to think that just a couple of weeks later, this was the place where carnage and destruction and just unthinkable cruelty and horror took place is just hard for me to fathom. I've had many a night, many a situation being in Las Vegas, although there was an incident there too, but being in New Orleans, being on Bourbon Street, almost always there for some big, special event. It started off, of course, with football. Ironically, the first time I ever set foot on Bourbon Street was the year Georgia played Notre Dame for the national championship. Just coming into the end of my high school career, you got to love the just impulse of youth, because we decided, me and my friends, three other guys, my close friends, and who are still my best friends to this day, we just decided about lunchtime on the day before the game on New Year's Eve that, you know what, we ought to just go in the car and go down there and go to the game. We had no hotel reservations. We had no tickets. We had no knowledge of New Orleans. None of us had ever set foot there. But here we are in the car an hour and a half later with, I, who knows what kind of probably a grocery sack, because I don't think there were even the plastic bags yet. They were still the paper kind, maybe a shopping bag of some kind, maybe a gym bag. I don't know what we use for our clothes, which we probably brought like one change of shirt and maybe a change of underwear. Who knows? But we go blowing down to New Orleans with no plan and have no idea what we're getting into. We go straight to Bourbon Street. We get there at night. The place was already hopping. It was like, this was a great decision. Here we are in New Orleans. We probably had probably the guy with the most money amongst us maybe had 40 or 50 bucks. I think I had like maybe 20 or 25. But that's the kind of innocence of that first experience of going down there. And we were so good already at wheeling and dealing to get tickets. We did it for every sports event in Atlanta throughout my entire high school and young adult career that, yeah, we got down there and started wielding our magic, and all of us end up getting tickets and getting to go to the game and watching Herschel Walker lead Georgia to a national championship over Notre Dame. So the irony was rich for me in looking at that situation, remembering my first time, and just the sheer exhilaration of being at a place where you just said to yourself, I am truly right now where it's at. This is where you need to be on this night on New Year's Eve before the game tomorrow afternoon. And basically, we stayed out on Bourbon Street almost all the way up to sunrise and happened to run into another friend of ours who was with some guys. They actually had a room. So it was a real blessing. I don't really think much sleep happened there. There was probably 8 or 9 guys in that room. They let us sleep on the floor. And I think I wadded up a shirt because certainly there was not enough bedding or pillows or whatever. But it was a blessed situation because you got to take a shower and at least feel like you were somewhat restored as a human being before heading off to the Superdome. We wheeled and dealed, got tickets, and saw Georgia and Notre Dame. And just going to the Superdome, which was brand new right around that time, was spectacular. It was like, wow, this stadium, unbelievable. And knowing the history of the Superdome and how it played the role in Katrina and was completely trashed and just really damaged by the storm and the renovation and the revival, the Super Bowl will be played there in 5 or 6 weeks. So all those thoughts and the fact that I was just recently standing literally right where this was happening really hit home for me. And, you know, the reaction afterwards is what I want to talk about. I mean, there's no accounting for this individual who was an American-born citizen, who served in the U.S. military, who was retained with military connections in these recent years, doing advisory work and consulting or whatever. We never know what really goes on in the background of this kind of military community where, you know, contractors will come up with deals for guys that have gone ahead and ended their service. And it's amazing to me to learn that Jabbar, the murderer in this particular situation, still had active security clearance because of his involvement with whatever military contractor. So here's a guy that's entrusted with secrets on classified information. And in the meantime, his own personal life is failing. His second marriage had gone up in smoke. He had a bunch of kids. He didn't have a steady income coming in. And so this guy started looking to other sources, like reading a bunch of the nonsense that's on the internet. Now, remember, as recently as just a couple of years ago, if we had an opinion about the imperfection of the 2020 election, that was subject to be censored or not even allowed to be posted. But Yet you can log on today and it's never been interrupted. The hatred and vitriol from these radical groups. And I find it to be really tragic that people are already calling this an ISIS terrorist operation. This was not an ISIS terrorist operation. This was one disgruntled, bitter, homicidal maniac who justified his impulse to lash out at society and other people, starting with his own family and friends. He speculated that that was his first idea. He would just kill his entire family and all of his friends. But then he didn't think that would make an appropriate statement because people would associate that with his disgruntlement with a lot of those people individually and not recognize the larger mission that he was on to indiscriminately kill infidels, people that don't believe in this radicalism. But what's really sad is Muslim religion is a religion of peace. It is a religion that is practiced by millions of people around the world. And you've got to wonder, when something like this happens and every one of them gets painted with the same brush as being some kind of radical for their religious beliefs, it's really, really unfair. You look at famous people in our country, one of them sharing the same last name as this guy, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Many younger people might not realize that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was born in New York City, to a family there, and his name was Louis Alcindor, Alcindor, Louis Alcindor. And when young Louis went to college, Louis Alcindor played with that name, and even when he was drafted into the NBA, before realizing that he wanted to embrace his Muslim heritage and changing his name to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But that transition was not accompanied with bitterness and homicidal notions. He was practicing what he had come to believe was his religious faith. And that's a wonderful thing, no matter what your religion is, to be completely devoted to your faith is a laudable acceptable practice, but it doesn't need to be clouded by the completely irresponsible, and irresponsible is a too light a word, the completely vitriolic, hate-filled, situation where you want to kill other people that don't believe as you do. Of course, Muhammad Ali is one of the most famous major transitions. Cassius Clay from Louisville, Kentucky, he too adopted his Muslim faith. And, it was actually in the early years kind of abused by the leaders of the Muslim religion in America, trying to exploit him and his fame for as much money and headlines as they could get. He became disgruntled with all of that and kind of rededicated himself a second time and professed that he was not going to be affiliated with any particular branch or any kind of remotely radical situation. He found inner peace and strength by simply embracing the tenets of Islamic teachings. And, so there's so many people like that. I saw an interview with this really impressive gentleman last night who's starting a huge movement of interfaith origins, trying to get everybody from lots of different religions and backgrounds and ethnicities and whatever else on board for a common purpose, that no matter what your faith or what your beliefs, that the one thing, that the greatest thing we have in common is being Americans, because America was conceptualized to give everybody this kind of religious liberty. And because I'm a different religion than you, or I look different than you, or I have preferences of who I love different than you. That doesn't mean we don't have the greatest common bond possible. That's being Americans, where we can all be in that mode, where we can be in lockstep solidarity, and we can be different individually. That's the goal, and that's what needs to be the goal going forward. But what happened after the murderous rampage on that night in New Orleans, the next day? Of course, the fallout, it was the same day as the sun rose and the horror of what happened became clear to everybody in the country. The Sugar Bowl was postponed one day because there was security concerns. Of course, how many times, folks, does it happen that immediately somebody says, well, we saw this suspicious guy and we saw this and we saw that. And there's always, you know, we're going to have to make sure that there's other combatants and other people affiliated with this guy, not still running around loose. And they had to go through another whole sweep of the Superdome and make sure it was locked down and ready to go. The game was postponed one day until Thursday. They finally reached a pretty quick conclusion because they even had video footage because they had found some explosive devices on sidewalks. This guy had gone down there hours earlier and put bombs in coolers. Thankfully, he was a crappy bomb maker because none of them ignited, thank God, and saved some more lives. But it was pretty clear after about 12 hours that Sinsud Din Jabbar was acting alone, and this was again not an ISIS operation. This was a homicidal maniac frustrated with his own life and his own failings, and what better way to act out his frustration than to kill as many innocent people by running over them on Bourbon Street, a symbolic place of just, you know, frivolity and fun and celebration. This miserable bastard, I hope he is so deep in the cores of hell right now that he will rot every day for the rest of eternity. So that all being said, the next day when the Sugar Bowl did roll around, we saw evidence of some of the worst things about our country right now. And it started in the most innocent of ways as the buildup to the game was coming. ABC, ESPN, the parent company Disney, yes, the same Disney that has the happiest places in the world, and all of the fantasy, glorious legacy of so much family entertainment, a company that has inexplicably in the last 10 or 12 years completely gone off the deep end and transformed from an entertainment company into a preachy, didactic, sermonizing pain in the ass that wants to tell you how to think, how to live your life, and wants to tell you how evil you are and how terrible and corrupt your country is because everybody doesn't have this line of thinking. And what in the heck, if you're a Disney stockholder, you've got to be going, what in the world are we doing here? They're going back and changing classic movies and putting diverse characters in them. They're espousing characters running around the parks to be these kind of asexual, unidentifiable, homogenous beings, not male or female, playing up all this multi-gender nonsense. And again, whatever somebody wants to identify, whatever somebody wants to be, as long as they don't tread on my turf or interrupt the liberty and freedoms of others, you know, that's fine. Do what you want. That's what America's all about. But when you start to impose with the powerful forces of network television your ridiculous beliefs and your anti-American sentiments, you've just gone too far. So right before the game, a huge part of the story, of course, was what happened the night before on Bourbon Street. And ABC conveniently cuts to a commercial right when the teams are running on the field. The Notre Dame players coming out, carrying the front guys, the captains, the seniors, carrying American flags onto the field while the crowd enthusiastically chanted USA. And then the playing of the national anthem. You know, it just so happened that we were in commercial during all of that time. We saw none of this pushback to say, we're not going to stand for this. This is America. Terrorists are not going to win the day here. And this guy was just a homegrown terrorist, a self-identified terrorist, but we're not going to let the actions of this abominable murdering scum completely derail our country and what we're here to celebrate, the freedom and liberty to convene and without fear, take in a great event that defines our country. But ESPN, ABC, and the Disney Corporation decide you don't need to see any of this display of defiance and celebration of who we are as a people and a country. If you happen to be on the SEC network, they showed everything. Of course, that's an ESPN property, but on the network where the vast majority of people were watching, you did not see any of that display of America at its finest, where people defiantly chanted USA and celebrated the memory properly of these people that were so, so unfairly and just to be in the wrong place at the wrong time at that very second while this murderous scumbag runs you over with a vehicle on a pedestrian street blocked off for no traffic. It just makes my blood boil, and I hope it does yours too, because all of these references to all of these things that are going on. Now, let me tell you what ESPN did air. And Disney did approve that. Oh, well, the break's over. So now let's hear from the president of Allstate Insurance, Tom Miller. Tom Miller comes on and says, we pray for all the people who lost their lives and their families. But then he slapped them in the face, kicked them in the backside, and completely insulted everybody's intelligence with what he said next. Because the message was, we're not going to, and we don't even need to talk about the perpetrator, but you know, he used language like this. We need to accept people's differences and imperfections. Excuse me? This guy did this because he had differences with us and he was an imperfect person. That's why he became a murderer and indiscriminately killed all of these people. And the classic line was, we have to abandon our addiction to divisiveness and negativity. So he's basically saying it's the American people's fault. It's mine and your fault because we're so negative and we are so divisive and we are so dismissive of everybody else. He's basically slapping in the face every American who believes in this country and their own individual liberty and saying, we all just have to get along. This is not a situation where anybody who embraced this guy because he had imperfection, it's not an imperfection to be a murderer, a mass killer. That's not an imperfection. That is an abomination. And we've got to get past this. Kumbaya, if we all would just join hands, I've got an idea. Why don't we all just get a collective, everybody go in and get a frontal lobotomy so we'll not have any thoughts of our own, not have any beliefs of our own, not have any passions of our own. We can all just sit around and stare at each other because we won't have the ability to program our thoughts and emotions like a human being is programmed and designed to do. America is our common bond, and any entity, any network, any corporation, anybody espousing this anti-America. America is evil. America is to blame for a murdering scumbag who runs people over at a New Year's Eve celebration on a pedestrian street when they never saw it coming. Their lives ended in the blink of an eye. That is not the fault of America. It's not my fault. It's not your fault. And it's certainly not the fault of our country, which is the greatest conception in the history of the world. And that's what I had to say. And I think that's what you desperately need to know. I wonder how Allstate's stock is doing today. I don't imagine very good. You think there was backlash against Bud Light for their kind of tongue-in-cheek gag of putting the transsexual on their beer cans last year? Well, this is... that was Bush League compared to what Tom Miller, the CEO of Allstate, did, telling us that it's our fault as Americans that this happens. And if we were just a little more understanding, everything would be just fine. Have a great week, everybody. Happy New Year once again. I'm Kip Kiefer. Thanks for listening to Need to Know.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.